Okay, so we are finishing up Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel, today is Musar Day. We missed the day last week, so we're off our week thing. So this is just the cycle that we'll be on for a little bit. And there's actually is a ton to speak about with regards to the beginning of Parshas Va'aschanan, which is about five or six psukim of like, the very end of Perek Gimel. But I just couldn't find much to speak about the end of Devarim. But the issue of Moshe's tefillah towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so there's a lot to be said. So just one issue, just before we even sort of get started with regards, get really into it, is that Rav Soloveitchik in, at least he, or I mean, Besdin in Reflections of the Rav, quotes the Rav as quoting our Pasuk, Veschanan El Hashem. And Rashi comments on that the terms of chinun, do you have it in front of you? What does exactly this Rashi say? Rashi's terminology is that the term chanin is that we want a free gift. Right? Ein, where is it?
An act of grace.
Ein chinun, first Rashi. Ein chinun b'chol makum el loshem matanas chinun. We want a free gift. Even though he, in theory, Moshe would have had his zechuyos to work off of, he didn't want to use them up at this point. So that's interesting, because the idea here, the Rav actually suggests that is preferable, that we ask for things and not try to bargain for things, is actually preferable. We defer techina to bakasha. Why? He says, because a bakasha is a claim, a demand, that claims that I need something, that I need something, but that I deserve something. And the idea of techina is that I don't really deserve anything. And that is considered a higher level. And he says, this is a hard thing. We petition without offering any apologies. It is most legitimate. But the request is always for matnas chinam, a gift that we do not deserve. And Christians and mystics consider techina an unworthy form of prayer, a cash and carry relationship, a form of trade or barter, a sacrifice or referring to the idea of asking for anything in this world from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It was like, what are you bothering Hashem with those types of things? And he says, even, I'm not sure what he's referring to here, but Christian prayers were limited to praises and thanksgiving, even the word bread in the famous Christian prayer. Any experts on the famous Christian prayers here? What?
Give us this day our daily bread.
Ah! Okay, that's the Lord's Prayer.
The Lord's Prayer.
Okay, so it was interpreted as referring to spiritual sustenance. That the bread in that, I'll tikri bread, Ella spiritual bread. That's the way, if you look at Rashi on the Lord's Prayer, that's apparently what he said. So eventually, Christianity did incorporate petitions for material sustenance, but these were kept as a minor key. The primary request is for soul things. So we do not. We have the right, but that's part of our duty to request physical things from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But we don't dare to suggest that we're going to be able to give things in exchange. And therefore, what is the idea of that? That the ideal is for us to say that we don't really deserve it, and yet we are requesting it anyway so that we'll be able to do your work. I mean, we don't really deserve anything in this world, but yet we ask for it. Now, that we do have the idea of having an exchange with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We do have something that we can offer a Kadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik himself talks about it. That's actually the meaning of the words Baruch Atah Hashem. Right? Blessed are you, Hashem. The idea of giving bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what we can offer. That without us being able to do that, so Hashem's name wouldn't be sanctified in this world. And that's really the goal, that the world is was bereft of Hashem's presence, and it's our job to bring in Hashem's presence into the world. So that is what we can offer Hashem in exchange. But we personally are unworthy of that task, but we just ask for sustenance so that we will be able to do so, that we'll be able to do that job. So Hashem doesn't actually owe us anything, but he could, but we do have the ability to give and promote the name of Hashem in this world. Okay. The main idea for today is this, this flip side. So one is, I came across an essay here from Rav David Pivarsky. Rav David Pivarsky was the Rosh Yeshiva one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Panovich, in Eretz Yisrael, right? That's who's safe that you have here. Yes, Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich. I picked this up at some point in Eretz Yisrael. Not really sure what was, just like, oh, it looks interesting. Things we'll be able to say over at some point. So I picked it up. Hey, does he have anything on this pasuk? So he actually, fascinating. So first I opened up to the beginning of Eschon. The only piece that he has on Paragimel, it says here on the side, and it's interesting because it tells you when he said this. So somebody published their notes from his Parsha Shirim. And this one it says, Mitoch HaSicha HaAchrona. From his last sicha, that's what it sounds like. I think it means, right, the last lecture, mm-hmm. Right? A Pittsburgh guy, Carnegie Mellon guy, right? Mm-hmm. All right, the last lecture of Rav David Pavarsky, Leil Shabbos Kodesh Vayir Tavshin Nintes. And it's pretty, I don't know what the situation was at the time, but whether he knew this was going to be the last thing or not, but it certainly is apropos to that idea. So, Ve'eschanan El Hashem Esahi Leimor, says the Medrash, Be'isahi, Be'ezeis, at what time is Moshe offering this tefillah? So the Medrash says, Be'oso eis shenismana Yehoshua. It was at that moment that Yehoshua was chosen. That when he chose Yehoshua, that's when he turned around to Hashem and says, okay, I want to be able to go in. Shenemar v'yas Yehoshua. Tzivesi. So Amar of, in our psukim here. So Amar of Huna, Kevet sh'amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe higia arkei l'Yehoshua. So at that time, when it became clear to Moshe that the time has come for him to, that Yeshua is taking the leadership, then he began to ask for mercy to be able to enter into the land. So the, so he says, so why wasn't he listened to? I mean, Moshe is a pretty good davener. He has a pretty nice track record of his tefillos being accepted. So why wasn't he listened to? So I did notice, actually, in Nefesh HaRa, I didn't get through the whole piece, Nefesh HaRa seems to allude to the idea that this was a personal tefillah as opposed to a tefillah tzibur. He wasn't davening on behalf of all Klal Yisrael. He seemed to be davening on behalf of himself. Unless you could make a case that he was davening on behalf of all Klal Yisrael. How would he, even if Yeshua was going to be the leader, how is he davening on behalf of all the Jewish people? Do we know? So hovering over this whole sugya here of Moshe going into Eretz Yisrael or not is an idea, and we'll get back to this a few times now, is that had Moshe gone into Eretz Yisrael, he would have built the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash would never have been destroyed. Right? So if it would have been, that could have been the focus, that would have been the Tefillat Tzibur. Moshe seemed to have been requesting personal ideas. Now, you're saying, wow! All right, that sounds great. Well, we'll see how great it would have been. Let's hold on a little bit. So he continues on. It says, and I'll share another medrash with you. Medrash at the very end of Devarim. It's interesting, the medrashim seem to get thinner and thinner as you move through the books. On the book of the Medrash Rabban Bereishis is like several volumes, and the Medrash Rabban Devarim is one volume, one chapter per parsha, as opposed to like Parshas Bereishis, which have like 50 chapters to that medrash. But in the medrash of Zosef Bracha Amra, it says Lamed Yud Aleph Yud Amar Rabbi Yochanan Eser Misos Ksuvus Alaf Al Moshe. There is 10 times that death is mentioned in reference to Moshe. And it gives all the psukim. Now, well, actually, let's continue on. And it actually gives over all of those psukim. Now, what's a little odd is that most of them are later on in the book of Devarim. Right? So how the orders work is a bit of a problem for this. But he says, but there's 10 times that he's like says, I understand that I'm going to die, or Hashem says you're going to die, or and even includes in here that Moshe went and died there, all right? But it says, Malami sha'ad eser pamim nigzer olav shelo yichanis la'aretz Yisrael. This teaches that up to those 10 times, it was decreed that Moshe wouldn't go into the land of Israel. V'adayin lo nischakim gzar din hakasha asher nigla olav beis din hagadol. But the harsh, but this decree was not yet sealed until he came up to the Beis Din HaGadol. Now, what is the Beis Din HaGadol? So, I wasn't sure, but in the art scroll here, it adds in, you know, there's the bold and the not bold. So, the bold you just read until the great court, but between the words great and the word court, it adds in the word celestial. So, I'm not sure how you understand that, this medrash, especially because he's about to invoke our pasuk, which happened obviously before he was up to the celestial court. It's also interesting that they capitalized the word celestial, like it's a proper noun. You know, like there's a, if you look it up in the phone book, it'll be great celestial court or something. But, all right, anyways. So Aralo, Gezerihi milfanish lo tavor, shenemar ki lo tavor al hayardim. So Hashem
who is there, says to him, it's a degree that you're not going to go over. So the davar zeh haya kal b'nei shel Moshe. But that wasn't a big deal. Moshe didn't think that. Plus he said, she'amar, Yisrael chatu chatos kedolos kampamim. Moshe says, the Jewish people sinned so many times, right? V'keyon shebikashi aleim rachmei miyad kabel mimeni. And as soon as I davened on their behalf, Hashem accepted it. So Moshe's like, so what's the big deal? So, you know, I could push it off a little bit. And when I get around to it, so then I'll offer my tefillos. I'm pretty good at that. And I'll be able to get off the hook. Right? And Hashem will be able to know that. And the Medrash pauses to show that that was true. And then he says, Ani shalokatais minurai, meni. And I haven't sinned from the time I was young. Which is interesting on two notes. First of all, we know of a sin that he did. And B, what sin did he do when he was young? Anyways, so v'kevin shirah kadosh baruch hu shakal adavar be'inav shel Moshe ve'inu omid b'tfila. So when Hashem saw that this was light in Moshe's eyes, miyad kapitzalav. So he sprang on Moshe, v'nishba b'shmo ha'gadosh shel Yochanes la'aretz Yisrael, and he swore that you're not going to allow to go into the land of Israel, and it quotes, actually a later pasuk later on, l'chein lo saviu esakal hazeh. Therefore you're not going to bring this congregation in, v'in l'chein el shvuah shenemar v'lchein nishbati l'veis l'chein. That was a shvuah that Hashem did. Moshe tried to get around it, but he wasn't able to get around it. So Reb David Pavarsky says, just builds upon this and says that Hashem didn't accept his tefillah. Why? Because he waited. Moshe wasn't urgent about it, and he waited. So therefore, Moshe was not going. But had he done it right away, Hashem would have accepted his tefillah. Moshe would have gone in. And had Moshe, and it continues on. And had Moshe gone in, basically would have built a base of Migdash, the base of Migdash would never have been destroyed. And we see what happens to the fact that you didn't daven right away, and you waited a little bit, there was a Chorban, you could blame the Chorban base of Migdash on Moshe. Right, that's the way he concludes, so therefore do everything at the right moment, which added to the point that this is his, you know, sort of his last speech, adds a little more urgency to that, right? That's just sort of an added note, like, you know, do things when you have a chance, don't push things off. Right. However, and this is on the Moshe end. Right. This is pointing at Moshe and saying, Moshe, you should have davened so that he could have gotten in. Is there perhaps a reason why Moshe maybe realized that maybe it wasn't going to be such a great idea for him to go in? So Rabbi Simon in Imre Baruch in. All of the essays have to do with pointing out the idea of Eschanan, comparing it to the idea of Shabbos Nachamu. Shabbos Nachamu, the Shabbos after Tisha B'Av. So Parshas Va'eschanan is always read the Shabbos after Tisha B'Av. That's the way it always works out. We design the calendar so that it works out that way. That's why Matos Masei are always together, even though, or not always, are almost always together, even though it's really long, right? In order to set that up, I think the Rabbi Beth Medrash spoke about this one time last year, right? Were you there? Yeah, okay. So he says the following. He builds the following. He said the following principle that. And the other side of the way we generally understand these psukim are is that Moshe made a request and Hashem said no. Truth is, that's actually the way we're parsing also. It's just, why did Hashem say no? Because Moshe didn't get around to making the request for a while. But either way, when there was a request, that's what how you understand the beginning of this, and Hashem said no. So, and not only did he say no, he said Al Tosef Davar Eli Od B'Davar Hazeh. He says I don't want to hear any more about this. So there is a idea in the Mefarshim, I just couldn't find it in the text, but certainly you've seen it before, that I don't want to hear anything more about this from you, because if I did, I would have to let you in. I would have to say yes. Meaning you got to my tipping point, that's it, I don't want to hear about it. So if Moshe offered one more tefillah, Hashem would have said, all right, well, I guess, you know, I can't withstand it anymore, you're going to get it. But Moshe didn't. So what's the fault there? What's going on there? So he quotes from the Megala Amukos. We quoted the Megala Amukos. It was Simchas Torah night that we quoted the Megala Amukos. Anybody know about the Megala Amukos? No? Megala Amukos from Nassan Shapira. Nassan Shapira was the Rav of Krakow, I believe before the Ramah. I think he was two Ramanim before the Ramah, I think. Actually, maybe not. Maybe it was two after. I forget. I didn't look it up today. If you go today to the Krakow cemetery. So if you go today to Krakow, Yom HaZeh, you go to every Jewish tour will take you to the Ramaz Shul, or the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, right? It's known as the Ramaz Shul, but that was the main shul in Krakow. I don't think it's bigger than these two rooms combined. It wasn't a very big place. And behind the Ramaz Shul, this is like the center square of town, but behind the Ramaz Shul was the Jewish cemetery. And if you go, the first thing you see when you go into the Jewish cemetery is the Pleitas HaRabbanim, the rabbinic section. And you see, like under a tree, there's three that are highlighted. One is the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, or the glosses of the Shulchan Aruch. Right next to him is the Megala Amukos, who we're talking about here. He is credited with bringing Kabbalistic teaching to Poland. That's sort of his thing. He was one who sort of brought, I'm not sure it was the Tsar itself, but bringing in the idea of Kabbalah, bringing it to Poland. That's who we're talking about here. There is one famous rabbi, just so we know, there's one famous rabbi who is not in the rabbinic section in the Krakow Cemetery. Do we know who that is? From a Karlbach story. The story of Yassel the Holy Miser. Are we familiar with Yassel the Holy Miser story? Oh, come on. Bekias, we got to know these things.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the Yassel? What was the story? There was Yassel. There was someone named Yassel who people would go to his house, and he would ask them for money, and he would ask them what their issues are, and he would say what their issues are, and then he'd yell at them to get lost. And then and everyone thought he was called the Miser, Yassel the Miser.
Right.
And he never gave any money to when people came to his door. So the story goes that after he passed away, so the next that Friday there was a knock on the rabbi's door, and they asked the rabbi, I need money for Shabbos. He gave money for Shabbos. 2 minutes later, there's another knock on the door. Right, I need money for Shabbos. He gives money for Shabbos. Then he realizes that all these poor people are coming. So what happened last Shabbos? He said, well, every Shabbos morning, there was a slip envelope under my desk, under my door, with the money that I needed for Shabbos. And now it's not there anymore. And he realized that it was Yassel the Miser who was giving all these people the money. He became known as, and they had already buried him in the far corner of the cemetery. Right? They had buried him in the far corner of the cemetery. And he, so the Rebbe, the Rav said, I'm going to be buried with Yassela. And you go today, Ad Yom HaZeh, right? The Tosfos Yontif. Do you know the Tosfos Yontif? Yontov Heller, I think the last name is. The commentary on in the standard Vilna edition of a Mishnah. There's on one side is the Bartanur, and the other side is the Tosfos Yontif. So that the author of the Tosfos Yontif is buried in the far corner of the Krakow Cemetery. But if you go to Wikipedia, It says like allegedly, like the legend of Yassel the Holy Miser. Like, what do you mean the legend? Right? There's some reason why the Rebbe is buried all the way in the corner. Right? They're not sure which is around and which one is Yassel's kever. There were, a lot of them were destroyed during the war. But that's the story there. But anyway, so getting back to the Megala Amukos. Megala Amukos is buried in the front of the Krakow Cemetery. And he explains this, that there is a Gemara in Masechta Sota that says as follows. Dorash Rav Chanina Bar Papa, my dechsev, what does it mean? Ranenu tzadikim b'Hashem, la'ashrim navasila. Sing, the tzadikim will sing to Hashem, the upright will offer fitting praise. And the Gemara comments, al tikri nava tehila ela neve tehila. Don't just say fitting praise, but a place of praise. What does that mean? This is referring to Moshe and David, that the haters were not able to destroy the things that they made. What does that mean? So David is easier. David, there's a pasuk in Eicha, Dichsev, where it says, Tavu ba'aretz shehareha, that the gates of Yerushalayim fell into the ground. That sounds. What it seems to be implying is that they didn't. Where the gates, the walls of Yerushalayim were not destroyed, rather they collapsed. Right, and they went down into the ground because David made it. It wasn't going to be destroyed. Right, Moshe, the Amar Mar, it says, "Mishenivne mikdash rishon nignas oal moed crush of krasav uvrecha v'amuda v'adonav." And with regards to Moshe, what did Moshe make? Moshe made the Mishkan. So the Mishkan was buried. Right, its beams, hooks, bars, pillars, and sockets—all of them were buried, as opposed to being destroyed. Nimsa, what? She'ilu hayin nichnas Moshe la'aretz Yisrael v'nivne hamikdash al yado, that had Moshe gone into Eretz Yisrael and had built the base of Mikdash, lo hayu yichol masoneim lishol b'maase yadav. They would not have been able to be destroyed. The haters of Hashem would not have been able to destroy the things that Moshe made. So that sounds like a good thing, right? That was my. There we go. Right? So that sounds like a good thing. So why is that? So what's the issue? So there's a famous medrash. There's a famous medrash that we're told. Never told the following. Does it have the medrash spelled out here? Yes. The medrash tells us in Eicha Rabasi, in Eicha, Mizmor li Asaf elukim bo goyim menachla secha. The song of Asaf, the non-Jews have come into your nachla. What is nachla? Your inheritance. Meaning if the non-Jews have come into the Beis HaMikdash. So the medrash continues, lo hava krat sarach lemimar, ela bechi la Asaf, nihi la Asaf, kina la Asaf. Says, what does Mizmor li Asaf mean? A song to Asaf, the non-Jews have come into your heichal, into the Beis HaMikdash. So the medrash asks, what are you saying, the song of Asaf? It should be the dirge of Asaf, the cry of Asaf. What do you mean, the song of Asaf? So the medrash continues about Omer Mizmor li Asaf. Why is it Mizmor li Asaf? Ela mashal melech she'asa beis chupa levino v'saida v'kaira v'tzaira v'yatza v'no l'tarvusra. That he built a chupa, he built the canopy for his son and made it all nice. And then his son went and did some bad things. So miyad Allah hamelech l'chupa v'kara es havilos v'shaver es hakanim natal padgol shelo ivuv shel kanim v'haya mizamir. And what did the father do? The king, what did the king do? The king destroyed, not son Chuppah, or the son, where the son was going to live, right? He destroyed it, he tore down everything that he had built for the son. And then he sang. What did he sing? Amr lo hamelech, hifa chufasu sha'al shabano, v'yas yoshev u'mazamir. So he said to the king, you just tore your son's home, right? And now you're singing. So Amr lohem, he says, mizmor ani shahafi chufasu shalbano, v'lo shafu chamasu al bano. That I took my anger out on his Chuppah, on the building, and not on my son itself. So too here, Kadosh Baruch Hu hichriv heichal mekadesh va'ata yoshev mezamer. Hashem says the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and you're singing. So Amar Lahem, Hashem responded, Mizmor ani sheshafach HaKadosh Baruch Hu chamasu, or Asaf says, Mizmor ani sheshafach HaKadosh Baruch Hu chamasu al ha'itzim ve'al avanim ve'lo shafach chamasu al Yisrael. That I'm happy that Hashem took his anger out on sticks and stones and didn't take his anger out on B'nai Yisrael. So he suggests that perhaps is why Hashem told Moshe to stop. But if I told, and this is what the Megala Muko says, but had Moshe continued, so Moshe would have built a Beis HaMikdash that would not have been able to be destroyed. Right? Then what would have happened if B'nai Yisrael would have sinned? Right? The implication of that, I always thought, was, and B'nai Yisrael wouldn't sin and everything would be fine. So Megala Muko says, no, there's no, that was not a guarantee that B'nai Yisrael is going to sin. What's the proof? But so Moshe was alive, B'nai Yisrael sinned plenty. B'nai Yisrael sinned plenty. Right, and so what's gonna so then what's going to be if Moshe's Beis HaMikdash would not have been able to be destroyed, suggests the Megala Mukos. So no, then Hashem would have had to take it out on B'nai Yisrael. The fact that Moshe did not go in, Hashem realizes, okay, so there'll be a Beis HaMikdash that will be built, and I'll be able to destroy it, and be able to send the message to B'nai Yisrael, and that way B'nai Yisrael would be able to continue, in that way. He says, by the way, Megala Mukos actually quotes a different medrash that seems to say the same thing. He says, Im ata tavra es yardin Yisrael yovedu, ki az lo haya efshar lahachrivas Beis HaMikdash, umela haya Yisrael nevadim. Explicit medrash. That if you will go across the Yardane, it will cause B'nai Yisrael to be destroyed, because I will not be able to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Mimela B'nai Yisrael will have to be destroyed. That's what the medrash suggests. So that is the words from the Megala Mukos. It's interesting that Gemara points out that idea, that medrash is hinted to in the Gemara in Maseches Kedushin. In what context? So the Gemara in Maseches Kedushin, Daf Lamed Aleph, deals with issues of Kivud Aveim. The halachas of Kivud Aveim are mainly focused around that area of Maseches Kedushin. So it tells the following story: Amar Rabbi Abba Kagon Avimi Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. Amar Rabbi Abba Kagon Avimi Bari Kayim Mitzvos Kivud. Right? Abba says, Rav Abba who says, my son Avimi, he fulfills the mitzvah of Kivud Aveim. How? Chamisha b'nei samchi havalei l'avimi b'chai aviv. That in my lifetime, Rabbi Abahu's commenting, right? Avimi, my son, had five children who became musmachim, who got smicha. Right? A proud Jewish grandparent, right? Right? Vafilu hachi ki hava asar of Abahu kari abava. Right? V'lo haya maniach l'echem iban of leich. That whenever I would come to the door, he would call out, Avimi would call out, I'm going to get the door. I'm going to get the door. No one else can get the door. Right. So Yom Echad, one time, Amr Le Ashkin Maya, one time,
He said, or I said, Rabbi Abba says, one time I said, get me a drink of water. So diyasi le nimnam. And by the time he got back with the water, I had fallen asleep. Right? So this happens when I try to get Rivka to sleep with a bottle of milk, and she finishes the bottle of milk, and she requests another bottle of milk. So it's a good thing, right, when you show up and she's already sleeping. That's a good thing. But right, so so my son came with the a cup of water. So gachin kai alea adis yair. Right, and I had fallen asleep. He waited there right next to me until I woke up. So he stay milsa, and as soon as I was able, to, as soon as I woke up, he gave me the water. So he stay milsa v'dar shavimi mizmor liyasef. So while he was there, he darshaned this idea of Mizmor Liyasef. He darshaned this. So Rashi, this is Mizmor Liyasef in the Gemara. So Rashi explains what he's talking about, and he thinks that that is actually the text of the Gemara and just left things out, that he was able to understand this drasha, this idea of Mizmor Liyasef, Elokim Bo Goy Menach L'Asecha, the idea that non-Jews have come into your heritage, Kina Liyasef, I should say Kina, El Shomar Asaf, right, that if it wasn't for the fact that that we had the base of Migdash to be able to be destroyed, so it would have taken that on us. By the way, this is the understanding of why the Avelus of Tisha B'Av loosens halfway through the day, right? Why is it that after Chatzos, after midday of Tisha B'Av, the halachos of Tisha B'Av become more lenient? So many say it's based on this medrash, that until that point, it was unclear what was going to happen. Was it going to be the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed, or the Jewish people was going to be destroyed? Once the Beis HaMikdash was lit on fire, it became clear that at least B'nai Yisrael was going to be saved. So that is the nechama, that is the consolation of Tisha B'Av. So he quotes here from the Ben Ish Chai, and the Ben Yehoyada, he says, what does the one have to do with another? What does Kivud Av Eim have to do with this idea of Mizmor Liyasef? So he suggests, right, Mashal Av Im Benosh Avo So'ayin Shavlachin B'Shvil Shehara Avimi Ata Havaso Im Aviv Da'avagachin Kai Le Adi Sahir Zach Lidrash B'Mizmor Zeh. Why is it that because he had this patience and waited there, that's why he was able to have this drasha? Kolomar Machmas Godel Avasol Aviv Zacha Al Haskara Hanachona Shomeis Migdash Hay Machmas Rachmi Av Al Abein. Because of his tremendous love for his father, he was able to understand the tremendous love that a father would have for their son, and therefore he could understand the Kadosh Baruch Hu also, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu has tremendous love for the Jewish people, and that he was able to, that he took anger out on the building rather than on the people. So you flip back to the idea of Rav David Pivarsky, right, that Moshe was patient, Moshe didn't offer the tefillos, so that might also have been this idea. Maybe Moshe also realized the same truth, right? Moshe didn't offer another tefillah, so the same, it could be perhaps the same principle. If so, why is it hidden? I mean, why did Moshe daven at all? Moshe realized this was going to be a problem, so why did he daven? What's the point of the whole thing, right? It's like a joke. Right? I always going to say, I'm going to daven, you're going to say no. So just leave the whole exercise out, right? So perhaps what's the goal at this point? What's the goal of Devarim? So the goal of Devarim, the answer to that question is always to get B'nai Yisrael ready to go enter into the land of Israel. So what's this section doing right here? It's to show it's in the middle of talking about how difficult it's going to be to conquer the land. So as part of the demonstrating how difficult it will be to conquer the land, it's to show the love for the land as well. But look at the reward you're going to get. I desire so much that I'm going to be able to go in. And keep that in mind. So it's important, A, for Moshe to show I want to get in. On the other hand, it's also perhaps important, as history played out, that maybe Moshe not be able to go in directly. If one wants to recall, we spoke about this idea of does B'nai Yisrael have the ability to be perfect? I think we spoke about that when we learned Parshas Ki Tisa. So I think some of these ideas can plug into that that section as well. All right, we'll stop here. I guess we'll pick up Yirtzeh Hashem tomorrow with Perek Dalet.
One question.
Yes.